This is a book review of The Alter Imperial Paradigm, Empire Studies in the Book of Revelation by Shane Wood, Leiden Brill, 2016. This book is 314 pages. The Alter Imperial Paradigm was written by Shane Wood, and this book serves as the publication of his PhD dissertation. Wood completed his PhD from the University of Edinburgh and currently serves as Professor of New Testament Studies and the Associate Academic Dean at Ozark Christian College in Joplin, Missouri. Among other places, Wood has published in Expository Times and has contributed to works on Currents in British Research on the Apocalypse, along with Dragons, John, and Every Grain of Sand, Essays on the Book of Revelation. In The Alter Imperial Paradigm, Wood intends to, quote, resurrect the voice of the marginalized author of Revelation, who addresses those in search of their suppressed identity on the theological fringes of society. Wood claims to achieve this by constructing the Alter Imperial Paradigm, a reorganization of Revelation's theoretical background, which is sourced from the biblical scholarship of empire studies and informs imperial inquiry. He asserts that applying his paradigm even to problematic texts offers a fresh vantage point with which to view the imagery of the apocalypse. This, then, enables Revelation's reader to both grasp how the apocalypse interacts with the Roman Empire and to avoid reductionistic, non-cosmically focused interpretations. In other words, Wood's paradigm frames Revelation's imagery such that the reader may recognize the greater alternative conception of reality beyond that of simply the worldly empire and its authority and reign. He makes his argument in the following series of steps. First, Wood introduces his topic and scholarship relevant to the discussion. Second, he reviews insights from historical empire studies. Third, Wood observes several weaknesses in historical empire studies and suggests the Alter Imperial Paradigm as the solution. Fourth, he considers the imperial propaganda of the Roman Empire. Fifth, he evaluates Revelation's authorship date to discern the nature of the ruling dynasty's Christian persecution. Sixth, he applies the Alter Imperial Paradigm to an interpretive lens through which to gauge how Revelation 20, verses 7 through 10, an especially challenging text, interacts with the Roman Empire. Finally, Wood analyzes the effects of applying the paradigm and draws inferences to answer how Revelation interacts with the Roman Empire more broadly. This work is valuable not only because it provides plausible significance for specific imagery in Revelation, but also because it offers meaningful explanations for Revelation's historically enigmatic passages while broadening the significance of the apocalypse overall. Wood's audience is the Christian seminary student or scholar, and the following is a summary and evaluation of his work. Summary. First, Wood introduces pertinent subject matter by considering historical studies related to his pursuit. He begins by reviewing Revelation scholarship from the previous 125 years, including intertextual, historical, and sociological studies, and he subsequently discusses the advent of imperial studies in the recent 25 years. Wood then offers from this survey several observations for empire studies on the significance of the perspective of the oppressed, the presence of persecution, the socio-historical setting, and the imperial cult, all as they lead up to his thesis. After his introduction, Wood mentions insights from historical empire studies. While noting other interpretive methods, he asserts that post-colonial criticism and examinations of dominance supply significant insights for navigating empire studies. For Wood, post-colonial criticism restores voice and identity to the ostracized by critiquing the ancient text and its interpretations so as to construct a lucid reading from the perspective of the marginalized. Examinations of dominance include James Scott's idea on the public transcript as the rulers united and enacted world, and the dominant hidden transcript as the ruler's private arena for managing disagreement, and the subject hidden transcript that exists to contradict the public transcript and not to reinforce it. Wood agrees with Scott that subjects use rumors, gossip, folktales, songs, gestures, jokes, and theater in their hidden transcript to subtly criticize power in the public transcript, and thus regain dignity and establish an identity. In other words, Wood sees postcolonialism and examinations of dominance as revealing typical power dynamics between the dominant and the oppressed peoples in a society. Then, Wood cautions against common interpretive dangers in Revelation, including anti-imperial assumptions, textual assertions, and historical contextual ambiguity. For instance, in noting scholarship that cherry-picks texts, assigns imperial ideas, and avoids explaining a politically benign section or even a theologically encumbered text, Wood presents the risk of arriving at fragile interpretive frameworks for Revelation. To mitigate such risk, Wood posits his alter imperial paradigm, which allows for elements of subversion, acquiescence, both, or neither in the subject text, and works through the construction of the sovereign narrative of the Roman Empire and points of conversation in the subject narrative. Subsequently, Wood identifies imperial propaganda throughout Rome. He says that for the Roman Empire, every item, coins, weapons, altars, etc., and every encounter, funerals, festivals, triumphs, etc., was an opportunity to communicate the sovereign narrative. That is, Rome's messaging was personal, interactive, and ubiquitous. And Wood goes on to add that its message was threefold. Number one, the Roman Empire is the ruler of the kings of the earth. Number two, the Roman Empire is favored by the gods. Number three, the Roman Empire is the bearer of pax. He views this first message as propagandized by writers, geographical depictions, and coins, along with the Flavian dynasties replacing Rome's civil war history with its conquering of the Jewish and British peoples. Regarding the second claim, Wood sees the Romans causally connecting their piety to divine favor and wartime victory. Thus, its rulers prioritized temple construction, priestly appointments, preserving religious works, and embracing religious names, all with the result of prominently projecting divine favor. And Wood says Rome pushed its third message in its literature, inscriptions, temple rituals, coinage in both Augustus's and the Flavian dynasties. Significantly, Rome's triumphal processions integrated all three messages into an elaborate parade, bidding viewers to participate in it, and crucial to this event was the procession of the chief enemy leader bound in chains. In sum, Rome's imperial propaganda relentlessly projected its claim to world rule caused by divine favor bringing about universal peace, and it is actively calling its recipients to participate. Next, Wood argues for Revelation's late date authorship, from 92 to 96 CE, based on both external and internal evidence. As to the former, he states that the early Christian witness overwhelmingly supports a late date, and he goes on to both cite a variety of early sources and defend specifically Irenaeus's witness. Regarding internal evidence, Wood evaluates three significant texts and concludes that, number one, John wrote of a temple when the physical temple did not exist. Two, interpreting the beast's number, 666, as Nero is inadequate. And three, using the succession of Roman emperors in Revelation 17:9-11 to glean the date of its authorship entails significant flaws and methodological particularities. For Wood, then, the Domitiac date remains the most plausible time of Revelation's authorship. Wood also argues for Revelation's late date authorship based on the ruling dynasty's Christian persecution. He first cites a problem in claiming late date authorship, the mismatch of persecution in Revelation and its apparent lack under Domitian, and then he evaluates standard solutions and their rejoinders. Wood determines that historical studies fail to include non-physical persecution, a legitimate reading of Revelation's Christian persecution, and 2nd and 3rd century physical persecution suggests underlying 1st century non-physical persecution. He further argues that since the Flavian dynasty promoted anti-Jewish sentiment, an anti-Jewish milieu grew up under Domitian, and most did not distinguish Jews from Christians after 70 CE. Christians likely experienced non-physical persecution that occasioned physical acts of persecution under Domitian's reign, a conclusion that Wood sees as aligning with Revelation's picture of Christian persecution. After this, Wood uses his alter imperial paradigm as a framework through which to judge how Revelation 20, 7 through 10 interacts with the Roman Empire. Considering the passage's difficulty, Wood first critiques deficient approaches, including the theological systems method, with its positions based on one's millennial view. Then he observes Revelation's literary structure, noting that Revelation 20, 7 through 10's significance as the climactic tension before the book peaks in Revelation 21, 1 through 8. Next, he finds from Revelation 21 and 3 and 7 through 10 that God releases Satan from the pit, but after Satan's release, he remains in chains. This leads Wood to connect Revelation 20, 7 through 10 with the Roman triumphal procession, an event entailing people in white garments looking on, a parading of military spoils, and the emergence of 1, the triumphant emperor, and 2, the chief enemy leader bound in chains. He argues that this procession was of such importance for propagandizing onlookers and merging them into participants that the procession itself decorated the cities and adorned imperial coinage. After that, Wood notes links between Rome's triumphal procession and Revelation 19, 11 through 21, and 20, verses 7 through 10. He says that the former text presents Jesus as the Son of God, who rides in his Father's triumphal procession on a single white horse, with the latter depicting God as sovereignly leading Satan, the bound captive, to God's intended destination, Satan's execution. For Wood, Revelation shows that the war is won through Christ's victory on the cross. The battle, however, is left open-ended until the triumphal procession. Finally, Wood analyzes the effects of applying the paradigm and draws significant inferences to answer how Revelation interacts with the Roman Empire. For example, he finds that the triumphal procession imagery in Revelation 27 through 10 reveals the key antagonist of the subject narrative, Satan, not Rome. Wood means that while some find Revelation to be an anti-Rome document, his paradigm shows Revelation's horizon to be higher and cosmic. Wood supports this conclusion by noting that Revelation further stylizes Old Testament beast imagery and purposely connects figures of good and evil in deliberate pairings, including the beast of the sea and Jesus, the beast of the earth and the Holy Spirit, Satan and the Father, the followers of both evil and good. In other words, Revelation presents Rome as merely following the evil triad, and thus a subordinate figure in the cosmic story. For Wood, then, Revelation's imagery clarifies the central enemy for Christians in Asia Minor to be Satan, and it constructs an alter empire of the triad of good. Wood understands Jesus' sacrifice, his suffering and patient endurance, his victory on the cross, as creating this alter empire, to be a kingdom and priests with sacrifice and witness as its politics of conquest contra the evil empire's blasphemy and deception. Consequently, he infers that Revelation calls the church to reflect the politics of conquest displayed in the triad of good, sacrificial nonviolence, the means through which conquest is secured. Wood sees that the goal of such acts is the repentance of the agents of evil. He concludes by arguing that Revelation intends to construct the alter imperial paradigm to present for the church the cosmic battle as beyond the public transcript and beyond first century Rome. Critical evaluation. One strength of Wood's book is that before arguing his own thesis, he evaluates other scholarly approaches for understanding how Revelation interacts with the Roman Empire. For example, he identifies one approach as Old Testament intertextuality. He catalogs numerous scholarly contributions in that field, and he concludes that the approach remains inadequate because it does not explain Revelation's alteration or deviation from precise Old Testament forms. By first assessing historical scholarship on approaches to understanding Revelation, Wood shows that he has measured the benefits of prior methods and thus poises his reader to accept his ensuing contributions, which build on these historical studies. This is a strength of his book. A second strength of Wood's work is his conclusion from dominant studies that despite silence in public records, a subjected people yet find a voice and identity through subtle means. For instance, he notes the complex dynamics between subjects and the sovereign, and then asserts, other forms of resistance outside of open rebellion exist and are implemented on a daily basis. The voices of the subjects are intentionally suppressed. Any analysis based exclusively on the public transcript is likely to conclude that subordinate groups endorse the terms of their subordination. In other words, Wood finds that one should not expect to discern from public records oppression of and resistance from the dominated, for the sovereign regulates these records. Instead, dominated subjects employ veiled opposition through subject transcript, a descriptor that Wood's paradigm assigns to John's apocalypse. In showing both that public transcripts tend to quell subject voices and suggest subject compliance, and that subject transcripts give voice to the oppressed, Wood orients his reader both to accept the presence of subject-sovereign conflict under Domitian's reign, despite its apparent lack in public records, and to appreciate Revelation as a subject transcript relating to the public transcript. This enables Revelation's reader to better grasp how the apocalypse conveys its message, and thus supports its thesis. Another strength of Wood's book includes his careful presentation of Rome's triumphal procession as a centralized propaganda vehicle. He delineates Rome's means and messages of propaganda. He shows these to coalesce in Rome's triumphal procession, and he concludes that the procession was an example of propaganda that invited the empire's subjects to participate in the sovereign narrative that presented a world in which the Roman Empire was the ruler of the kings of the earth because they were favored by the gods, which resulted in Roman pax or peace. As a result, Wood gives to his reader the conversation point with which he later claims Revelation 27-10 interacts. That is, since Wood later argues that the events of Revelation 27-10 must be understood with the Roman triumphal procession in mind, his meticulous illustration of this contextual referent prepares his reader with the pertinent background to see and assent to his coming argument. This serves to bolster Wood's effort. A fourth strength of Wood's work involves his thoughtful analysis of Revelation's authorship date, which then brackets and thus clarifies possible reference for Revelation's imagery. For example, his four observations supporting the claim that Christians experienced non-physical and occasionally physical persecution in Domitian's reign confront scholarship that denies a late authorship date on grounds of dissonance between Revelation's clear indication of Christian persecution and the apparent lack in the historical record. In overcoming this objection and establishing Revelation's late authorship date between 92 and 96 CE, Wood may now look beyond 70 CE to the Flavian dynasty's triumphal procession of 71 CE as a chief point of conversation with which Revelation interacts. Thus, Wood's dating Revelation clarifies for his reader the Roman context from which John would have drawn imagery, reference, and it gives credence to Wood before he constructs his alter imperial paradigm from these very reference. All of this supports the goal of the book. Wood further strengthens his thesis by showing how his paradigm handles an enigmatic text. He says that if, however, Revelation's interaction with the Roman Empire is to be adequately explored, then even the most obscure passages must be considered for the overall portrait painted in the Apocalypse. Thus, he constructs his paradigm from Revelation's points of conversation with the Roman Empire, applying the paradigm to Revelation 20, and he finds correspondence with Rome's triumphal procession, an event that sometimes does not occur for months or even years after the battle was won. The chief enemy leader is not killed but imprisoned to preserve this crucial final detail of the procession when the war's delayed consummation becomes a reality. Then, Wood connects this with Satan being bound and imprisoned to preserve him for the divinely ordained moment of his release, which is emphasized in Revelation 20, verse 3b. He must be let out for a short time. By applying his alter imperial paradigm to a particularly puzzling text, Wood builds confidence that his paradigm's unique interpretive framework can handle difficult texts where other historical studies and approaches have struggled. This is a strength of his work. One weakness of Wood's work involves his difficulty parsing his thesis. Throughout his work, he clearly enunciates and repeats his research question: how does Revelation interact with the Roman Empire? He lays out his methodology for developing his thesis chapter by chapter. However, his actual thesis, which must entail constructing the alter-imperial paradigm in order to directly address the stated research question, requires piecing together on the part of the reader. In one sentence, he passively states that Revelation's theoretical background is repositioned, presumably by his paradigm. In another, he implies that his paradigm entails this reorganization. In a third sentence, he says that applying his paradigm reveals Revelation's intent of a cosmic and not an earthly horizon. In a still fourth sentence, he argues that his paradigm helps to avoid reductionistic interpretations of Revelation and its imagery. Then, dozens of pages later, Wood appears for the first time to introduce a primary aim of constructing and applying his paradigm, to, quote, resurrect the voice of the marginalized author of Revelation, end quote. These sentences all seem to form his thesis and purpose, but given how disparately Wood arranged them, the reader grasps for precisely what Wood intends to argue. This is a weakness of the work. Another weakness of Wood's book is the less than obvious meaning of the title of the work. The reader wonders, what does Wood mean by alter in Alter Imperial Paradigm? He eventually says, quote, the apocalypse uses imperial imagery to reveal the key antagonist, Satan, and to construct the alter empire of the triad of good, end quote. He cites Fiorenza, who describes Jesus as the one who created an alternate reign and community. He asserts that the sacrificial death of Jesus on the cross creates a kingdom and priests, an alter empire. However, these clarifications come hundreds of pages into the book and in the footnotes. In the meantime, the reader suspects that Wood intends the notion of alternative and perhaps even an alternative to the empire, but by not clarifying his title early on, his argument comes across unclear and somewhat ambiguous. This too is a weakness. One other weakness of the work includes his limited application of the paradigm to one of Revelation's difficult texts, Revelation 20. Of course, this text is very difficult and makes for a strong case study. However, would his paradigm be sufficiently robust to explain other challenging passages? For example, Robert Mounce raises the problem of, quote, the presence of Gentiles outside the heavenly Jerusalem following the final judgment, the overflow of evil, and the restoration of the new heaven and earth in Revelation 21, 24, and 26, and 22, verses 2 and 15. Are there points of conversation with the Roman Empire relevant to framing and thus explaining this text? And what other ambiguous texts might Wood's paradigm help untangle? Wood skillfully shows that Revelation indeed points its reader to the cosmic horizon, with Satan being the chief enemy rather than Rome, but the reader wonders what additional insights might be gained by applying the paradigm to other challenging passages. Conclusion. In Wood's Alter Imperial Paradigm, he evaluates relevant historical scholarship, he constructs his paradigm in light of the Roman Empire's imperial propaganda and contexts, and he applies the paradigm as a frame through which to see Revelation interacting with the empire. In so doing, Wood succeeds in presenting John's apocalypse as giving voice and identity to a subjected people, as revealing the battle occurring between good and evil triads on the cosmic horizon, and as summoning its readers to live in accordance with Jesus' politics of conquest in his alter imperial kingdom. The content of the book aligns well with the intended audience of seminary-level students or scholars, and Wood certainly contributes to scholarship in pointing out the parallels and the possible significance of the triumphal procession as it pertains to Revelation. Though not without several areas of needed improvement, I find this book to be both helpful and intriguing. Not only does it offer a novel approach to understanding aspects of interpretively challenging portions of Revelation, but it also stimulates discussion about the significance of Revelation 20, one of the most difficult texts in the book. In that Wood's work offers an approach for making broad conclusions about the book of Revelation, I plan to reference it on such matters.